Welcome back, family. It's rare that we get to speak to someone on the cusp of greatness, but that's just what happened this week. Johann Smiles is starring in the latest OWN Network drama from Will Packer entitled Ambitions. Before the premiere episode hit the air, he stopped by and joined the family to tell us about his journey to this place and time, the importance of education in his journey, and what it means to be a man and a father. The conversation was one of the most enlightening and uplifting that we've had in a while, and we wish him nothing but success with this new project. Your new uncle's about to do some big things, family, so take a listen and let us know what you think. Let's go. All right, welcome back, family. This week, we have a guest who's got big things coming up and has been doing this for quite some time, and I want to give him the opportunity to introduce himself. But first, I want to say thank you for taking the time to do this and welcome to the family. So I normally let people choose what they want to be in the family. You want to be a cousin, a brother, an uncle. I'll let you choose.
I'd be the cool uncle right now.
All right. So you know that means unk. We just call out unk at the barbecue.
Right, unk.
All right. So unk, introduce yourself. Tell everybody who you are and what you do.
All right, Johann Smiles, film and television actor, also educator from Birmingham, Alabama, by way of all the southern states, and currently am the starring in the upcoming TV series drama on the OWN Network called Ambitions. It's scheduled to premiere June 18th. So, very excited about that. And that's kind of what I do.
So before we get into the bright lights, because I know you got this coming up next week, but how did it all start for you?
Well, my trajectory in pursuing acting started for me really not even in high school. I think it started earlier than that. You know, again, I'm from Birmingham, and I'm an 80s baby, so that's given my age. But my mother was very wise, and she was a single divorced parent who had five kids, four boys, one girl, and I'm the second oldest. And so one of the things that she utilized, although she's not a artistic person herself, she was a teacher, she's done worked in prison, she's done correction officer, and so forth, but she involved us in arts. So that was from being in the marching band to particularly with me, because I think she uniquely knew each kid, each of her children had a different type of personality. So for me, it was art, that's inclusive of drawing and sketching, and then it was the band. I played, play sports just for a very small portion of my life in high school. But for me, I finally kind of jumped into acting in my senior year in high school. So from there, after that, I just went and pursued in my training and education at Alabama State University. Big shout out to Dr. Tanita Stewart, who just recently retired. She holds the title there as the dean of the College of Visual and Performing Arts. But at the time when I was in school, in 98, she was the department chair. She had just actually left Jackson State University a couple of years back, and many people know her from the hit TV show. My mother and my grandparents know her from In the Heat of the Night. She played Auntie Kiki, and she was Samuel Jackson's wife in The Time to Kill. So that's my, like, mom, second mom, mentor, director, trainer. So after leaving Alabama State University, I went and furthered my training at LSU and received my MFA in acting from their three-year program, which is now a two-year program. Here recently, it's changed over to a two-year program. So, and then while in Louisiana, I have to add this, while in Louisiana at grad school, I'm a family guy. So outside of pursuing the acting for what I believe to be a career choice and something I love doing and passionate about, whether the highs and lows, I end up getting involved in the film industry. In 2006 was when I went to LSU. And so that segued my 14, actually going on 15 years of film and television.
All right. So that's, you covered a lot of ground. So I want to kind of back up and let's highlight some things. you did a lot in high school. You did a lot before you even got to college. That was like the sports and the marching band and all that. Was it all a conscious decision to veer into acting as your path, or did it kind of find you?
Yeah, actually, I was a people's person. As you know, in school, you know, they would call somebody like me, you know, social or a slightly class clown. But I just looked at it in the way of I was good with interacting with people, communicating with people. I'm not a comedian, but I had a way of making people laugh and smile to get through their day. But years later, and maybe that's another conversation, I understood why that was important to me. But acting was something I didn't foresee. Okay. I will say this, that while in elementary school at Central Park Elementary in Birmingham, they used to take us to the children's theater. It was a field trip that I guess you would start going to maybe your third grade, fourth grade year. And I remember seeing some shows at an early age at the children's theater. And that kind of, you know, ignited the fire, maybe the imagination of, that's pretty cool. Look at them people on stage. It was very, it felt very untouchable. But by my junior year, I was involved in a lot of things in high school. But that class clowning or that people's interaction and make people laugh and enjoy their day kind of got me in a tight squeeze at one point. There was a coach who was the assistant principal. And I remember I did one too many kind of joking pranks mm-hmm. of some sort. And they had just hired this lady from New York named Ms. Jolene Joseph to come and do drama. We hadn't had any drama up until that point. So this was like in 90, my senior year was 98. So I got in trouble. They were going to suspend me, send me home to my mom. I said, that is not an option. I have a mom who I cannot. That's not happening. You might right. as well just need some work to do in the cafeteria, but I can't go home. My mother was not going to let that fly. So he said, well, I tell you what, since you like the class clown and you so good with people, we got a drama teacher. I'm gonna give you less than maybe 2 months to see if you go up there and talk to her and see if she can find something for you to do. And that's how I kind of started my foundation of learning with acting.
So did you take to it like, what's that saying? Like a fish to water?
Yeah. It was either swim or drown. And I wasn't going to do that, you know, literally was not going to allow that to happen. And it's funny because once I graduated, it was until my junior year in college, I went and showed my mother all the little small little slips that their teachers would give you to go down to the office or for warning and little things like that. And she cracked up laughing. I said, Mom, I understand. It may not have been a good reflection at the time, but I promise you, I found something that I can make a career out of, enjoying being around people and communicating with people. So that's the beauty of it. But yeah, Ms. Joseph gave me a chance. She exposed us to other things. There were other schools. And keep in mind, we're in Birmingham, so it was a public school.
Okay.
So our school was a magnet school. And the thing about that was you had other schools that were very equipped with speech and art and theater. And even with us at Inslee, I think we didn't have we had textbooks, you know what I'm saying? We had some very good teachers. I mean, one of my teachers was Lucy Foster. She was the first black girls that went to Tuscaloosa and segregated time. She was one of those individuals, the four black girls, or I think it was three or four, that was on the first to be enrolled in University of Tuscaloosa. She was my history teacher. So we had some history there, but in terms of like art, you know, we had to make do with what we had. You know, it was kind of like Wilding Out and some of the new shows that are out there, American Got Talent or American Idol. Like, imagine back in the 80s or, well, that's the 90s for me, late 90s, and you're just making use of what you don't have just to survive and get through the day. So, but she gave me, taught us some things, exposed us to some things, and I enjoyed it and said, okay, let's see how far I can go.
So one of the things I love to find out about creative people is how they took the next step. So for you, you decided to go to school and really start to hone your craft. Were you aware of the programs available to you, or it was kind of blind luck that you fell into the place that you needed to be?
Blind, but at the same time, we had counselors. And I think for any public school, most of the counselors at the time, you know, any counselor would like to advise or encourage students to go to college. You know, that's important first. Continue your education. But in terms of like acting and arts, I'm the first of my family. I'm the only one in my family that actually has pursued this. I have uncles, whether they were military, play sports. I have my baby brother. He's the NFL guy.
Okay.
But I'm the only one that does that. So I had saw a brochure. One was for Los Angeles to go to a film school called AMDA. And then there was another school, and then Alabama State. Well, there's fear. When you're in the South and you are used to family and a close-knit, a kind of knit sort of environment, there is a small fear, as J. Cole says in his live performance. He was like, you know, many people will never see beyond where they are because they live in fear. You know, so much other things out there. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we play it safe and we be comfortable where we are, you know. And so I thought about L.A., but I thought about being homeless. I thought about I didn't have family out there. How I'm going to eat. I'm 18 years old. And the next option was Alabama State. And when I looked at that brochure and saw that this lady, Dr. Tanil Stewart, was right there in Montgomery, and she had done all these, been in all these movies and done this TV series, I said, that's where I'm going, because that's the closest thing to Hollywood I can get.
So from there, there was a four-year program, I'm assuming.
It took me 8 years to finish undergrad. And that was because, I had a good time my freshman, sophomore year, but didn't? I was in love. I was, what did you say?
Who didn't? I still apologize to my parents for that.
I had a great time, but, you know, when you come out of high school, and then keep in mind, man, you know, you talk about insecurities. As I mentioned earlier, one of the things why I was a class clown and over the past years, I share this with students and people and try to, you know, inspire people to have self-identity. I was a slim, skinny guy. Then, you know, it wasn't like the cool kid, the handsome guy that all the girls wanted. They were my friends. You know, I'm the guy that can make you laugh. So he's the friend guy,
right.
You know. And so I fell in love with this young lady who became my wife my sophomore year. At the time, I was pledging Alpha. And, intake process of Alpha, you know, pledging Alpha. I got married young and... you know, I had kids in college. I have my oldest son now is 18. I have a 16, soon to be 17, and a 15-year-old from my first marriage. I was married at 21 and stayed married in that marriage for 12 years, you know, going through college and then into grad school. But my life was different, you know, pursuing acting and stuff. I had to work. Scholarship money ran out. All of my peers, I'm the only one that was married. I mean, I say this, and I hope they don't get upset with me. I have a close friend of mine who's about to get married now, but at the time, I remember when all the single guys would hang around me, and that was a cool pitch for them because we'll go hang out, you know, and it would be like, oh, they would introduce me. This is Johan's son. He's married. So that leaves everybody else.
Don't even look at him. He good.
Right. Yeah. They were introducing me to anybody. It was like, yeah, it's your husband. He's married. But, you know, and my friends, and when I say that jokingly, I had a lot of people who were around me that wished me the best. But it was a very interesting time, man, when I was in school. Very interesting time, man. I'm very immature growing up. You're talking to a guy, again, who just met his father. Last year, I met my father, met physically my father's last year, but the last time I saw him before last year in November was at the age of 5. So you're talking about living to see 18, graduating from high school, going to college, pursuing acting, and then being a hetero male guy, you know, in the 90s, and saying, hey, I'm doing acting, and not having to deal with the stereotypes and some of the homophobic comments of others who felt like, you know, men could not do that, you know, without any sort of kind of stigma placed on you. So I had that, and then again, getting married and then creating a family early, man. It was an interesting part of my life. Those 8 years.
I want to get back to the education thing, but you said something that just it startled me a little and makes me think that there has to be a level of maturity and growth that you've had to attain over the years to meet your father again after all those years and be able to speak about it in such a calm manner. Where does that come from?
When I had my son, you know, I tell people there's no excuse to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And because we are given a gift of free will, sometimes it's used loosely, and sometimes it's hard. It can be misunderstood what free will is, but it's there. And so my free will for me in choice was that I was not going to harbor. That does not mean there were times when I was upset and needed my father. I remember reaching out to him when after I had maybe 2 years in my first marriage. I was going through some hardships. I called him, and I remember he answered the phone, and he simply said, "Hey, I can't talk to you." And that little phrase, and he hung, got off the phone. But he said it really calm. He said, "Hey, nice to hear from you, but I can't talk to you." And he got off the phone, and so from there, man, it was kind of like, you know, dude, I'm reaching out to you. You know, why? You know, I'm calling you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm looking for you. And from there, I went through another, and you could maybe call that very upset, angry, rebellious phase, because I needed not an answer. I think for most part, when I tell people, what was that first phone call in college like? Call them, was to hear him say, "I'm proud of you," you know, or something. That's what I needed, was affirmation. I didn't even want to discuss why he wasn't there. I wanted to tell him about all of my accomplishments and just for him to say, "I'm proud of you." Now, he probably said, "That's crazy. Why would you want to talk to your father about other stuff?" But at that time, man, I had achieved a lot of things, not because it was without him. I did it. Courage is operating in spite of fear.
Right.
It's not the absence of fear. So I had courage to operate through my teenage and developmental years with my mother's guidance, through the fear, through the pain, but I wanted to let him know there was some strength in it. Now, there's some things we need to talk about, but I wanted to know, hey, I'm still your son. Mm-hmm. You still will be my dad. We can harbor this anger and the dissension all day long. The relationship is the foundation. That don't go anywhere.
It's interesting that you say that. I talk to a lot of black men, and you'd be amazed how many people are just wanted to hear, if not their father, but the male figure in their life, tell them that they were proud of who they'd become. And it seems to be something that we all seek in some form.
Yeah. It's like my mother, and I think that's the balance of life, you know, the balance of male and female, the yin and the yang and so forth, you know, however you want to put it in perspective, there is a balance of everything. And my mother and my grandmother at the time, who was the home care person, it was so much that they could do for me and my three other younger brothers. Because keep in mind, my mom had four boys, one girl. So, you know, this single divorced parent woman was hard on us, you know. But at the same time, there was something that was missing. And here's something else. My sister has her father. I have mine. My two brothers behind me, they have theirs, and my baby brother had his father. So one thing my mother would not say to us was bad things about our father. She always encouraged them and us to reach out to him. So if that wasn't instilled in me, imagine the opposite of that. Because I have a great relationship with my dad's mom. I would go and see her all the time, you know, for several years and ask about my dad and see how he was doing. So I'm glad I didn't. There are some black women, if that conversation is one to have, that are not as bitter. Although there were some emotional things my mother had that she shared later on to how she felt about things. And when I finally talked to my dad, there's his side of the story. And I'm just glad that for me, I wanted to be something for my sons. But here's the thing. I still lack. I talked to my sons. I said, man, y'all guys, that was so interesting. Y'all, it's so beautiful to see you guys tell me y'all love me and to know that you can hear me tell you that back. I don't know what that feels like, but I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But I've had other great men in my life. Let me say that, because guess what? The examples and the connections have always been there despite not having my biological father. So there's a lot of men who would say, yeah, my dad wasn't there, but I had a coach or I had a mentor or I had a spiritual father. But there is nothing like the DNA, blood-driven connection to be able to, if you can, bridge or reconnect that little broken tie of you and your father. And it's even deeper, you know, because I imagine, again, even through art and through acting, through the roles I played, some of the stuff we call purpose, and this is my career, what else are we pursuing our careers in search of? Is it in search of an answer that we don't have or a connection that we didn't have with somebody that's a parent or something that we lost? It's something else that drives purpose. And I knew my dad has been a part of my purpose because it's important to me. Fatherhood and sonship with their fathers, that's important to me.
We got a feel, but I felt like it was such an important topic for us to touch on. I want to ask you about, you said MFA, and I'll be honest with you. I've studied the knowledge of the acting field, but MFA is something that I was only, you know, slightly familiar with. So could you explain to people what that is and how important it is?
MFA is a Master of Fine Arts. It is the highest degree in acting. There are different areas of MFAs. You have MFAs in directing, technical design, costume, props, and so forth. But my MFA is in acting. That's the highest degree degree that I could obtain in that study. It covers all areas of knowledge, practical, and it extends itself even more in the educational realm of things. All right, so. Many scholars will also tell you that the MFA is equivalent, is the same as a PhD. Okay. Now, some other folks would debate that, but that's the highest I can go in acting, you know. And so it's important in this sense for one, training. Some undergraduate schools are limited in maybe resources and what they have. So I always tell students and people, if you feel like you need to get more training, then you can go to grad school and or work a job, save your money, and go take some acting class, you know. But that was the route that I took because, again, I had educators in my life. And my director mentor, she just kept saying to me personally, you have a family. Now, you can take your family on your journey, but if you were to pursue your MFA and decide to go and teach because you're a great teacher, because she would let me actually help sometimes when she was on projects, be like a teacher's assistant. She said, hey, you're a great teacher. You're even more impactful to be able to give knowledge to people. You know, it's an old saying, and it may not be true. They say that you can tell if a person is good at what they do if they can teach it.
So is this what led to you being a professor?
Honestly, it is an option of thought because when I finished grad school, I was going to go to L.A.
Okay.
Leave LSU, take my family to L.A. And but But fresh out of grad school, here's the thing. I remember I had built my film career while in grad school in Louisiana when the film stuff was booming. And many people said, hey, you don't have to go anywhere. You stay right here in Louisiana. Why move to L.A.? Because everything at the time was coming to Louisiana. So I said, okay, cool. So in between me, after graduating, in between me auditioning, booking jobs, I was a shoe store manager. And then worked overnight at Target doing stock work. And one summer, my son and I, my sons, we were playing basketball. And then eventually I had one or two games. And the third or fourth game we played, I did something to my knee and injured my knee and broke a bone behind my kneecap. And that right there changed the game because it was kind of like all the money I had saved in grad school on the side went into a surgery that I had because, you know, insurance, again, you know, we're actors, we're trying to survive, you know. I had insurance, but the cost of that surgery was, and then the physical therapy was so expensive. After that surgery happened, I called my mentor and said, I can't go to L.A., you know, what do you advise I should do? She said, what should I advise? She said, you got an MFA. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, apply for some schools. You know, and she said, the good thing about that is that if the school would take you, they have what is called, if you get, if you're working on a getting tenure promotion, they have what is called professional development. They will allow you, when it's approved for you to go and do your film and television and teach.
Okay.
So that's the, yeah, that's the beauty of it. But here's the catch. I don't mean any harm to anybody that can hear this interview. There are some schools. Unfortunately, when we start getting to the dynamics of black PWIs, you know, white institutions and black institutions, there is a divided line between some schools understanding with a teacher who's a professor of acting that our professional development is film acting, stage acting, television. Some schools don't even look at that as professional development. They call it a whole nother career. And I went through that, which is why I and it's fun. I'm having this interview. Brown, guess what, Brown? So you guys actually get in an interview of something I haven't spoke about. I actually resigned until now. I actually resigned from working at a university because of the politics of them of misunderstanding me as an artist. Yeah, my film and television stuff is what my peers go and watch, and they review my work. And I had to debate that with a panel of people doing a tenure promotion, and that panel consisted of a science person, a biology, someone from education, someone from maybe a social worker, and maybe one other person. None of them were in the arts.
Yeah, no frame of
reference. So here I am telling him, I was trying to defend my oneself against these people who do science and research, who do grant writing. And they were like, well, they even questioned my MFA. And I said, now, if you go, it's interesting. HBCUs would train you for acting. But there aren't, and if I'm wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure there aren't any HBCUs that have a graduate school program. So what happens is, as a black performer, I have to go to a white institution. LSU, if you go to Ohio, you go to Penn State, you go anywhere and get an MFA. Now, you get your MFA, and all colleges and universities says you have to have that if you decide to be a professor. You got to have an MFA or PhD or MA. I get the MFA only to come back to an HBCU, work towards tenure, and then you question the MFA.
That makes no logical sense.
Right. Makes no logical sense. And then you question my professional development. So I asked them on that committee, if a lawyer practices law, social worker goes out in the field, a literature person goes and write a book, why did you call my professional development a whole nother, like he's in a whole nother career, like it's separate from my teaching? I don't get it. So that's kind of like the pros and the cons of an MFA. You're lucky if a white institution were hired due to diversity to get you in to teach at their university. Mm-hmm. But the people or the few African-Americans that probably have those jobs are probably not trying to go anywhere anytime soon because they know that that faculty understands the importance of a professor who asks actually is a working actor. That's recruitment, that's retention. That's why people go to certain schools, because my teacher, my professor, is not just sitting behind a desk and teaching in a class, and there and my teacher professor is relevant.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the pros and cons and the benefit of an MFA. But at the end of the day, most, to be honest with you, when I've been on set, when I give people my resume, my film, film and television resume, my MFA is not even on there. I used to put it on there, but I realized the directors and producers, some of them are educated. Some of them probably have been to grad school. But where I am in the game, we want to know what big top-selling movie you've been in. And if you've been in a big hitter that's gross millions or billions of dollars, who else have you worked with?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, they see where's your demo reel? That's how they, you know, include that in your audition tape. We need a demo reel. And no one has ever thought on an old resume of mine and told me in an audition room, "Oh, I see you went to LSU and got your MFA, and I see that you went to Alabama State." I've never had that conversation.
It's almost like the goalposts are moving depending on who you're talking to.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. There's some pride if somebody was to ask me, or, "Hey, what's where did you train them from?" If it comes up in a conversation, it's beautiful, you know. If I'm around other African-American actors on set, I mean, it's great to have HBCU pride, but a lot of times your training, you continue to get training, and you grow and you evolve. And so the degrees mean a lot, but they're of no use if you're not growing. And also, because it's so diverse now, man, you know, you can't just limit yourself to just one place and one set of ideas or one philosophy or one technique, you know. And then a lot of that stuff, man, in training, you know, you get so far into meeting actors and talking to them, and they'll say, "Man, some of that stuff goes out the door. Be honest, be authentic." You know, some of the things that you have been taught in class or things I've taught, I teach students. And I get to a point where it's like, hey, sometimes they just want to, you know, talent can only get you so far. Some of the things I've done in life and learned along the way, you know, life lessons on set, in my trailer, a lot of it didn't come from class. A lot of it came from just being who I was. People like to know I want to be able to know I can come to work with you every day. You know, we like you, you know, we really like you, man. We love to work with you again. Some of my jobs have happened that way, too. So I'm not discrediting saying no one should get training, whether MFA or just taking acting classes. But talent and classes are great to hone your skill, but you need to also work on you.
So before we get into the new project that you have coming up, maybe this sounds cliche, but I'd love to know, what was the proudest moment of your career?
The surprise moment was two things. Bill Duke.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of movies.
Legendary.
But
Bill
the
Duke.
Great Bill Duke, yes, legendary, who just had a birthday, and he's doing well, man. I crossed paths with him. Check this out. The surprise of my career, I met Bill Duke in college my junior year at the Kennedy Center. We had a conference we went to. And it was the American, KCAC, Kennedy Center American Theater Festival. I may be pronouncing it wrong. KCACTF. Those are the initials. And so Dr. Stewart says she may have a special guest. She knows a lot of people. This lady here grew up three doors. Morgan Freeman grew up three doors next to her.
Mm.
So she knows a lot of people. So she said, "I got a special guest." We on stage, and Bill Duke walks in, introduces himself, talks about some things, share some, you know, some insight, gave us an inspiring word. And I said, "Wow, man, we've been a celebrity." Now, keep in mind, Dr. Stewart, to other people, she's a celebrity to them, but she's right. Like our teacher, our mom. We're so right. Used to being around her. And that was in some around maybe 2000. Several years later, I have an audition for a movie project called Created Equal. I went to the first one, went to the second callback. There was a third one. I went to New Orleans. Walk in the room. Guess who's in there? Bill Duke. Now, he don't recognize me. I sit there. I do my audition. And he was, you know, just really surprised by, you know, what I brought to the table. And I told him, mentioned to him, hey, I told Dr. Stewart that I'll be that you might be here, and I want you to know that I met you several years ago during my undergraduate training, and it's just a pleasure and joy to be in the same room with you again. A week later, I get the part. I work with him, and he gave me my first like leading role in a film. Everything else up until that point has been like speaking lines, one line, two lines, a couple of things. And he trusted me in that movie project. Him and a lady, a producer named Theda Catalon, she lived in Dallas. Now she's in Georgia now. And I was blessed with that opportunity because Bill Duke, he wasn't just a director. He's like a griot. So in between tape, we had personal conversations, but he shared stuff that I needed to know and about me as a man, as a black African man, African-American, as a black performer. He was just giving me like wisdom and nuggets, you know, and that was like a wowing moment of my life that my first leading role would be with someone I met my sophomore, junior year in college, my leading role in a movie. The second other part was in my career was the TV series. This one and even two other ones, Containment and Shots Fired. Mm-hmm. This is the most consistent that I've had. You know when you tell family and friends, hey, guys, I got a project. Like even with the project now, I'll put it on Facebook and Instagram. Hey, guys, check it out. I got this role. I'm starring in it. You know, you're going to see me. Most of my close people that follow tend to see that one episode, and then they'll comment and go, man, great job. Let us know when you got something else. And I have to keep saying, keep watching. Keep watching the show. So I'm glad for myself. Right. I mean, you know, that I'm able to do some stuff where I can develop character. Who said it best? Viola Davis. She said it one time in an interview that people don't understand that after shooting, all the edit takes place, the post-production stuff. And a lot of your good work, you may never see. The audience may never see. Mm-hmm. So I'm blessed that people can see some consistency in characters. But I'm even more so excited in my career. Like the defining moment is being able to see that a lot of the work I put in there was kept. And it's most of it. So, yeah. Yeah, it's been a journey, man. But one last thing I would say in that question you asked me, a super wowing moment. And when I look at where I am or in my career, I moved to Mississippi and worked at the university I worked at. I previously talked about was Jackson State University. I got there in 2010. It's 2019. Everything on my resume from 2010 for the nine past years have happened for me living right here in Mississippi. I've never lived in New York. I never lived in L.A. I've worked in Louisiana and Georgia. Mm-hmm. Those have been my building states for my career. I pay homage to these states and to all of the wonderful actors and people that are family and friends. But everything that I've had for the past 9 years came from me being right in Jackson, Mississippi, and doing my traveling with my family. I remarried. I have a 3-year-old daughter and a 1-year-old son. So now, you know, we have the extended family, blended family now. And I've been managing that, man. And definitely at the time when I was a full-time assistant professor, working towards tenure, you know, trying to get tenure. So all of the stuff that I have, man, came from being right here in Jackson, Mississippi, man, which is a blessing. Most of my friends don't even know that. They tend to think they'll go, man, I thought you was in L.A. by now. I said, no, you know, got family, you know, wife, you know, she's, you know, a little more stable. Sometimes I have to make those decisions and make do what is for the good of my children and for my family. But God, it's amazing, man. Mm-hmm. I've been working and I haven't missed a beat.
Which brings us to what's coming up in, what, 14, 15 days, something like that?
Yeah, we have the 18th, so we have,
13 days. So let's get there. How does this come about?
Small world. This is a super small world. Now, jokingly, my wife is, she's from Mississippi, so a lot of times at family reunions, you hear a lot of people talk about, you know, in the South, kids and cousins and how small the world is and all where people need to know who your family folks are. But even in the industry, and definitely in the black component, the African Americans in the industry, small world. My first movie in undergrad was an extra in Stump the Yard. Brian White was the lead.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing him. There was a scene where they shot it at the Georgia Tech Stadium, and I was an extra. And I remember they were getting off the bus. And I saw it was Neo, him, Brian White, Columbus Shore, Megan Good. I'm looking like, man, wow, man, look at those guys, man. They look just like me. They look like they're almost my age.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, where was I when they had the auditions, you know, because they were doing stepping. I was an alpha. You know, I said, they look young. I said, you know what, my time is coming. So from there, I actually followed Brian White's career. In 2011, I had a red carpet event, an NAACP Image Award event in Los Angeles. I flew out to it. So get to the red carpet event. I was promoting, I can't remember what movie or TV show. It was Ours, I believe, before Paul Walker died. I happened to go out there and was trying to help promote or give some little, you know, verbiage on what I was in next. And so next to me on the red carpet line, I was standing next to, give me her name, Raven, not Raven, Lord forgive me, from Players Club. Pretty.
Oh, like, Lisa McCoy. Lisa Ray McCoy.
Yeah, that's right. Miss, please forgive me, Miss Lisa McCoy, if you hear this interview, please forgive me. She was standing next to me in all white. And then next to her was Blair Underwood. And I remember working on, was supposed to work on a project, Woman Die Hard Loose. I think I didn't get the role. And then right next to him was Brian White. That was 2011. I said, okay, there you go again. We're getting close. I said, I see you. In my head, I'm saying, I see you, Brian White. We, you know, that's cool. That's cool. We're on the same red carpet, but we haven't crossed paths yet. Like, we're on the same path, but we haven't worked yet. Mm-hmm. And then here it is, full circle. My character on this show, I'm excited because originally, my character didn't exist. There's an actress, Braylee Evans, plays Brian White's sister on the show.
Right.
And to not give away any spoilers, originally her character, from what was told to me, was supposed to be a comic relief. And Braylee has done a hell of a damn job on this show. Please excuse my language. She's a very awesome, talented actress. But her character's supposed to be a comic relief, and so the writers went back to the drawing board, and then somehow out of this discussion, my character was created. And then I had the audition, a second audition for that role, and bam, I booked it, looked at the cast list, and I said, man, this has got to be the most exciting time of my life. I am now finally working with Brian White, and we had that conversation, and we had a chance to break the ice and bond, and we've talked and laughed and shared a lot of things on set, man. And it's just a beautiful experience, man. And I finally had a chance to let him know how much I admire his trajectory and his growth as an actor, man. And that's the uplift that we have to do. You know, Brian White will be to someone else who on the outside would say, man, that's your competition. You're just as good. I don't see it that way. You know, I always tell people when I'm on a project with great people and talented people, I am greatness in the midst of greatness. And we are all equal in the sense that we're all working to create something together. The competition does exist. The competing for roles is real, for the jobs. But to be in something together, creating something together, that's a memory that you won't ever get. That, you know, sometimes one time, you get that opportunity one time. It depends on if a movie does well and have a sequel, or a TV show has a season 2, 3, or 4. So I'm just excited and speaking in the atmosphere that we do well in season 1 and that they continue to keep my character on this show.
And tell everybody, we said it once or twice, but it's the 18th on what network?
It is Ambitions June 18th on the OWN network at 10:30. Let's see. Let me make sure because I know some people have been asking me, but what time is it? Is it going to be at 10 o'clock? 9 Central Standard Time, but it's going to be at 10 o'clock on the OWN Network. What is also a beautiful thing I do want to share is that this is my second opportunity to work for Oprah and her network. Oprah is very excited about the show. It's just a wonderful feeling that when you create something, people tend to think that the producers or the creators don't see the work. You know, they're just like, hey, you know, I'm up here at the top, and I just got another opportunity for my network, and hope y'all cast good people and it goes well. But I've been told, and Will Packer, who has shared with us, that Oprah's been excited. He has seen some of the things, and he just, you know, was trying to, you know, his best and not just, you know, share much with what he's seen in terms of some of the footage that they have to watch. Mm-hmm. But the show itself is going to be exciting. You know, it's set in a world of politics and law and the intrigue and treachery that happens in the world of power and class and these intricate players in the political arena. And my character, if you want to know what do I do on the show, my character is the he's an Atlanta city councilman who is the rivalry to Mayor Lancaster, who's played by Brian White.
Okay.
And my character is a councilman for a community called The Bank. And we're trying to battle this thing of gentrification. And I eventually, at some point on the show, cross paths with Rundell Lancaster. And you have to watch to see, again, who she is and what that whole thing is about. So I'm excited.
Now you play got opposite me of Brian excited. White.
Yeah, if you like, I tell people, if you are, Will Packer says, if Empire and the old TV show Dynasty, now our moms and dads and grandparents remember Dynasty, but if Empire and Dynasty were to have a sexy child, that's what it would be. And so I tell people, if you like Greenleaf and that, how all of that is, and you combine it with some powerful folks like, you know, the characters that are in Queen Sugar, how that black family works and how that dynamics of that family structure is set up. If you combine Greenleaf and Queen Sugar together, but just make it a clash of politics and law and black and white and so forth and class and race and power, man, it's going to be a great show. I can't wait.
So, everyone, please make sure you watch it. I mean, we got to make sure there's a season two so we can get a second visit because there's so much more to cover. But I know that we've just started this project, but where would we be if we didn't look towards the future as well? So, what does the future hold for you? Where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
Wow, 5 years from now. I mentioned earlier I'm a father, you know. Well, let's just speak in context. I'm a husband, so 5 years from now, I hope that me and my wife are sustaining a great marriage. I'm a father, so I have little ones now, you know, that's been added to the bunch. And so the little one, he's one. So that means he'll be six, and my three-year-old daughter would be eight, man. So I'm hoping that in terms of fatherhood, 5 years from now, I will continue to grow in wisdom and be alive, man, in such a very, you know, perilous time that we live in, man, with so much going on with our culture and our race, man, and just the world economically and politically. So I just hope within 5 years I am around for my family. In terms of the career, my family's not separate from it. So, you know, all of it's inclusive, man. Just to whom much is given, much is required. So in terms of my career, I just hope within 5 years I ask and pray in faith that we can have more seasons to come with consistency in all of our characters. I pray for more on projects to work with other people that I will, you know, would love to see to work with. And then some of the people who are my colleagues that are my age that I've been auditioning with and see them on other stuff. I said earlier, like my Louisiana squad, you know, all those actors and actresses, I would love to work with them within the next couple of years. And then, too, man, what I'm currently working on is, which is my heart and joy as an educator, is speaking, man. If there's anyone who's listening to this and you need a speaker, motivational public speaker of some sort for the youth, for college students, for your community, your churches, please reach out to me. You know, you can follow me on Instagram at Johannes Miles. I'm on Facebook, and or you can also email me at artofbeing_workshop@yahoo.com. And that, again, that email is art of being, B-E-I-N-G underscore workshop.com. That's what I'm doing, man. I want to, continue to build up communities and definitely get to our young black boys and young black young girls too, again, to uplift them and what they want to do is dream, you know, it takes one to teach one. And they are equally important because they are our future leaders. You know, my sons, my children could be someone else's future leader, you know, whether it's a doctor, lawyer, whatever it is. So I'm here for the cause, man, to do my part politically, not even politically, but just as a social human activist. Let me just say that. Let me correctly say that. Human social activist, man. Because I'm not one of politics. I understand what goes on with that, but my heart is for humans, man, and definitely for our youth. So that's my goal within the next 5 years, man. It's great that you asked that, man, because people perish for a lack of knowledge, and if you don't have a vision, man, you know, people also perish because they don't have a vision or a plan. You know, we anticipate tomorrow. We only live for the day. The most important moment is now. And so I'm glad you asked me that because it's just a constant reminder, man, to keep in my forefront, what will you be doing in 5 years, you know? Because we got to plan for that. You only plan for it and take each day at a time, but it has to be a game plan, man. And I don't want to leave my family hungry, homeless, spiritually blind, you know, and or lost in any shape, form, or fashion. You know, not with them holding my last name and me being able to have a hands on in doing that. You know, I have a lot of areas to continue to grow and to excel. And I hope to see myself become even more a better person than where I am now in my life, you know?
Look, I have high hopes for not only the show, but for the next 5 years. I want to have you back telling me that you've not only met the goals that you set, but you done set even higher goals, and you've reached even further than you anticipated. So you got to make sure that you keep grinding and definitely come back and sit down with your family. You're the unk. You're at the barbecue. You now have responsibilities.
Man, call me unk. Yo, man. Yo, man. You know, I'm back. And that's the idea for our next family reunion, man. I would love to come back, man.
Now, yep. When the cousins start reaching out asking for money, it's entirely your fault.
Look here. If they ask for money, and if I have it, you know, and if it's in true heart and good intentions, I give it. But guess what? I've been taught. You can either show a person how to fish, or you can teach them. I hope that anybody that's asking for it, I can teach them how to go and get it.
Yeah, that? Don't just be showing up with a handout. Show up with a pencil as well. Look, I appreciate you so much for doing that.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity and much success on Brownstone and all of the individuals that you will continue to interview throughout this year, man. This is history in the making. Somebody will hear this and or read this article. I hope my children will be able to have access to this. If anything happened, you know what I'm saying, in my life, thank you for allowing yourself to be a vessel so that I can actually have a leaving legacy of some form of history. Written and or say it, you know, who was this guy? And so my son and maybe their children's children can say, look here, why don't you go look up Brownstone? There was an interview that they had with him. And these are the words that he said. I love my family. I love my kids, man. I'm proud of my sons. I'm proud of my family, my wife, the support. I also want to say I'm very proud of the in-laws, the blended family, just everybody, my classmates, all the actors that are out there. That are doing something, you know, whether degreed or not degreed, you are doing something in your life and pushing and striving for greatness for yourself and or for someone else, man. My affirmation and big hugs to everyone that is doing that. faithfully, relentlessly, and restlessly.
Want to say thanks to our new unc, Johann Smiles, for stopping by. Check him out on the 18th on the OWN Network, Ambitions. I'm looking forward to it. I know you should be looking forward to it. We got to support our OWN. Check us out on the web at viewfromthestoop.com. Check us out on Instagram, Facebook, all social media. Let us know what you think. We do this for you, family, and we couldn't be anything without you. So until next time, love.